proceed to the sixth case, Zamora Mallari v. Gonzalez. Johannes?
Good morning, Your Honors. Richard Haynes, may it please the Court, Richard Haynes on behalf of the petitioner, Ernesto Zamora Mallari. Like a lot of the cases, or two of the cases we've had before this Court dealing with the issue of 212C and this type of criminal offense, many of the arguments that I'll be presenting today are the same as were eloquently presented by my colleagues, so I'm going to focus on the highlights of my case and what makes my case particularly compelling. Mr. Mallari has had 8 years of litigation leading up to this day. He's a 49-year-old permanent resident here since 1991 and has a single conviction for misdemeanor criminal sexual abuse of a minor. He has never served a day in jail. He served a term of probation successfully, and he continues to live lawfully in the United States with his U.S. citizen mother, for whom he cares, children, and siblings. The law of the case in this case here is Mr. Mallari deserves his turn at a 212C hearing. The last Board of Immigration Appeals decision remanding this case to the Immigration Court had a specific directive that in light of INS versus St. Cyr, Mr. Mallari should have an opportunity to at least present his case for 212C. Consistent with that remand order, the Immigration Court set aside time, set aside a schedule for submitting evidence, and set aside an afternoon to hear witnesses. The government not only did not object, they joined in on that motion. No issue as to the comparable statutory grounds of deportability or inadmissibility were ever raised. But at 3 years after the first order came down, matter of Blake came up. And that was right on the eve of the final hearing. And the Immigration Court pretermitted an action directly opposite to the law of the case. The appellate body spoke initially, and then as a result of matter of Blake, after it changed its policy, the Immigration Court pretermitted the application. None of the exceptions to the law of the case have been presented, and I must say that the government does misunderstand my argument as to what the law of the case is. I'm not saying the law of the case is that he merits the grant of 212C relief. I say that he at least deserves an opportunity, like our two previous appellants, an opportunity to be heard and to have considerations of positive equities brought before the court before a final decision on this man's being banished from the United States forever is made. As to the matter of Blake, the underlying board decision that is before this court, as the court's been advised, Blake versus Carbone out of the Second Circuit has overruled matter of Blake. Additionally, this court has taken note of that ruling in its remand of the Gutierrez-Almazan case. And certainly, excuse me, it is off. Excuse me. Certainly, there is room in the Vallari decision, as has been discussed here, for the statutory counterpart analysis in Blake to be challenged. Vallari did not conclude that the statutory analysis engaged in Blake was necessarily right. It wasn't even challenged and left open the question, as has previously been argued, that Blake was wrong. And it appears that the Blake versus Carbone decision does give a reason for the board to reconsider its decision and does give a reason for this court to revisit the case of Mr. Mallari's right to have a 212C hearing. As to the allegation that the failure to file a brief in support of our BIA appeal in this last appeal waived any arguments, I submit that the notice of appeal that was submitted did specifically and thoroughly outline the legal and factual basis of this appeal. Moreover, the Board of Immigration Appeals decision leading up to today's petition did address the issue squarely and did not dismiss it out of hand. It addressed the issue, dismissing the appeal based on matter of Blake. And what's also important to note is that in all of the analysis and detailed idiosyncratic nitpicking with statutory counterpart analyses, the Blake versus Carbone court revisited what the essence of that analysis is, which was Francis. And is the alien who is seeking the 212C hearing put in a worse position because he's in removal proceedings versus seeking admission into the U.S. And because the crime that's at issue here could very well be considered a crime of moral turpitude, and as has been correctly cited by Mr. Kokel, the board has consistently held that it is a crime of moral turpitude. It, in fact, does meet the statutory counterpart test, albeit the government never raised it before today, before the matter of Blake came down. Lastly, as to remand, Mr. Malari also has an eligibility to readjust his status pursuant to matter of Grabriowski and Azarin. That motion to have the case remanded was denied, but without any discretion truly exercised. There is no discussion of the equities in this case at all, and in fact, it's errors of fact that are the basis of that decision, since it goes into negative factors outweighing positive factors. The only negative factor that we have in this case is a single conviction versus positive factors as described, extended family, years of hard work, paying taxes, and caring for an elderly mother who is actually recovering from cancer. So, in sum, and to put in perspective Mr. Malari's case and claim with all of the haggling over details relating to statutory counterpart analysis, we have here a man who wants his day in court to have his case heard. Equities relating to why he should be allowed to stay here, consider his hardships, consider his family ties, and let an immigration judge decide, is this man's crime so bad that the equities do not outweigh it, or should he at least be given another chance, or at least a chance to remain here? Thank you very much, and I'll reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
Ms. Wheeler?
May it please the Court, Brian Whalen on behalf of the Attorney General. I think I will follow Mr. Hannes' lead and address the same issues that he's discussed unless the Court has specific questions outside of those issues. First, to address the law of the case argument, the law of the case is not let Mr. Malari be heard on his 212C application. The law of the case, actually, the government's position is that the law of the case doctrine does not apply. If there is any law of the case, if there is any factual determination that was binding by the board's remand order, it is only that petitioner had the 7 years required residency. At the time that the immigration judge actually denied relief before the board's 2002 remand order, St. Cyr had already been decided. So the board was not remanding simply to look at St. Cyr. The board was remanding because petitioner then possessed the 7 years of lawful domicile that is required as part of the statutory elements to demonstrate relief for 212C eligibility. Accordingly, there is no law of the case doctrine violation with regard to the board's remand and with the immigration judge pre-terminating the 212C application. The board's remand order left the issue of eligibility open for the immigration judge to decide. Accordingly, there is no law of the case problem. Moving on to petitioner's arguments relating to the Second Circuit's decision in Blake v. Carbone, I think my colleagues have addressed this in some detail before me, but I would again stress that this court's decision in Valair, as well as the other circuits that have upheld the statutory counterpart test, dictate that this court or compel the conclusion that the court should continue to apply the statutory counterpart test. Also, I would again point out that two circuits who have addressed this issue since Blake v. Carbone's decision, the second, View in the Eighth and Abebe in the Ninth, have both gone against Blake and continue to apply the statutory counterpart test and find that sexual abuse of a minor does not have a statutory counterpart in the grounds of inadmissibility. I would also point out that there is a problem in the Blake decision in looking at the underlying criminal conduct as opposed to looking at the statutory ground of removal. This court and other courts that have addressed that contention that the focus should be on the underlying criminal grounds have rejected that argument. And in Francis, which Blake relies on to say that we should be looking, that the Second Circuit should be looking at the underlying grounds, the underlying criminal offense, there was no statutory counterpart problem in Francis because Francis was found deportable for a drug offense, which actually does have a statutory counterpart. So there was that issue was not presented to the court in Francis. So Blake's extension of Francis to say that we must look at the underlying criminal grounds is insupportable. Moving on to the waiver argument, petitioner did waive those arguments before the board in that petitioner's counsel chose a litigation strategy. Rather than fully address those issues and develop them between the board and present those challenges to the board's decision on a matter of Blake, petitioner chose to file a motion to remand in lieu of that brief. In fact, in his motion to remand, he relied on the reasoning in Blake that the aggravated felony ground of sexual abuse of a minor does not have a statutory counterpart to argue that he was admissible and able to adjust his status. So I would say that that constitutes a waiver, especially of petitioner's specific challenges that the court must look to see whether or not the crime could be a crime involving moral turpitude. He did not fully address those before the board. I would also point out and just distinguish Pasha, which was raised in petitioner's reply brief, because in Pasha the board basically gave a blind summary affirmance of the decision, and that was a case where the brief actually was never considered by the board, so the court found it disingenuous of the board to say that it had not fully addressed those issues, because it wasn't like this case where waiver is clear, where the issues were raised on the notice of appeal but then foregone in lieu of a different litigation strategy. So I would submit that Pasha is distinguishable. Finally, with regard to remand, which I think is an important part of the board's decision in this case, first, as we raised in our brief, the government's position is that petitioner's contentions regarding the board's denial of remand as a matter of discretion does not raise a constitutional claim or question of law. Petitioner's opening brief essentially challenges the board's weighing of the equities in the case, which does not present a question of law, and I would analogize it to the court's decision in Gadam, where this court found that, or noted that, the denial of a continuance on the part of the immigration judge as a matter of discretion did not present a question of law when the petitioner was simply challenging the weighing of the equities in an open-ended standard. Assuming for the sake of argument that this court has jurisdiction over the board's decision to remand, the board did not abuse its discretion in this case. The board demonstrated in its decision that it considered the equities in the case, that it considered the positive factors and the negative factors, and ultimately concluded that the negative factors outweighed the positive factors. And I think that's a reasonable conclusion on this record, where petitioner was convicted of a serious criminal offense, sexual abuse of a minor.
And they didn't identify any positive equities, did they?
The board did not specifically delineate any positive equities, which we know that the board is not under an obligation to do. We think that the board's decision shows that it did contemplate those equities. And finally, just with regard to petitioner's arguments that he's been deprived of his day in court, petitioner was able to proffer that evidence of the equities. He submitted his entire 212C application before the immigration judge, but the immigration judge was proper in deciding as a matter of law that he simply was not eligible. So the only thing that petitioner was deprived of is perhaps putting on live witnesses before the immigration judge, but that evidence was submitted to the court. If there are no further questions, I ask that you deny the petition for review. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Whelan. Okay. Amos?
Thank you, Your Honors. The law of the case is Mr. Mulari should have a 212C hearing. The statutory counterpart test, which was alive and well all throughout these proceedings, was never brought up as an issue prior to the Blake case coming down. The law of the case is, again, we're not seeking we're not saying that the law of the case is that Mr. Mulari warrants necessarily a decision on the merits, only that he get a chance to be heard. As to the waiver of the brief, the notice of appeal to the Board of Immigration Appeals gives strict warnings about specificity and completing communicating the legal argument. Had the board seeing that the notice of appeal did not clearly communicate the facts or the legal issues, it could have dismissed the appeal outright. Instead, the board chose to address the issue, upheld the immigration court's decision on matter of Blake. And as to the getting back to the remand order, although it doesn't go into any details about positive or negative equities, it does contain an error of fact that there are negative equities. And I am just curious as to what the negative equities are. Is there more than one? So far as is in the record, is there's only one negative equity, and that is this criminal conviction. Based on the arguments submitted in our briefs and presented today in oral argument, we request that this court remand the case for a 212C hearing before the immigration court or in the alternative for him to submit his adjustment of status application. Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.